moods, residual anger, fear, confusion. Sometimes these come at us as a storm of words and obsessive thoughts that repeat themselves as persistent visitors in our mind. Sometimes they're more, they can even be more of a bodily thing. Depression and sadness, and can feel like a complete lack of energy and a desire just to stay in bed and just, you know, hide from life. And anger, residual anger from perceived slights and painful treatment early in our lives, can come on as a wave, a flush, an energy in the body that's difficult to contain. That we, when we experience it, even though the person we're with who's triggered it is not the cause of the initial pain by any means, we still feel it being triggered and we want to act out on it. It's funny, I often have fear of talking in front of large groups, which is why 7 years ago I took this gig, and it comes across like this wave of chills up my arm, up my back of my neck, and then like the hairs stand on end, and then I get this feeling of just like, you know, contraction and discomfort. So, and a lot of these moods and dark experiences can have their roots as coping strategies. When we're kids and when we feel we're being abandoned, left out of the picture, we're being ignored, our parents are not taking care of us, we can develop tools of stamping our feet, throwing a tantrum, suddenly changing the subject, talking incessantly about ourselves. We can become sullen and moody and want to run away from people. So we have these impulses, and they become lodged, both lodged in parts of the brain, the striatum, which is responsible for habitual thoughts and actions, and then there's also there's the amygdala, which is the really gut emotional survival center. And so these behaviors become so deeply rooted in our survival mechanisms that they become impossible to be rid of. We all wish that our fear, our cravings, our sadness, that well of sadness that can reach up at any time and seem to swallow us, or our fears or whatever, we wish they would go away. And sometimes we look for the magic bullet. And one of the powerful tools about Buddhism is that it doesn't look at these embedded parts of the mind as things we're going to try to get rid of. We transform our relationship with them. So, for example, I think the most dominant ways that people have of relating towards unsocial, difficult emotional states and moods is through three strategies. The first strategy is we act out on the impulse. If it's an impulse to isolate because we're not feeling comfortable around people, or avoidance, we're scared of a interview or a conversation, so we avoid it. We're scared of doing our taxes, so we don't do them, or whatever. We're overwhelmed by work, so we avoid all of it and procrastinate. When we feel the flush of anger, we act out on it. And so the sum of it is, when we act out on so many of our impulses, the result isn't pretty. It keeps us lodged in these childhood coping strategies that may have worked when we're children, but no longer work now. You know? there's nothing sadder than seeing a 40-year-old, you know, throwing a tantrum, storming off out of a dinner party or whatever. I know one guy who literally can't be at a table conversation when the subject's not about him. So no matter what you're talking about, some film, suddenly he'll like interrupt and just bring the topic again and again to his business. It's quite startling. And it doesn't work as a successful method of getting attention. It simply rewards and keeps us stuck in our old coping strategies, our old survival tools. It's like we're children once again, screaming, "Look at me," to everyone. So then there's the second strategy, which is denial. Which means, go away, I don't want to deal with you, I'm going to do anything I can to distract myself to avoid the fact that that uncomfortable mood or state is back again. You know, I can feel that I'm getting sad, I can feel that I'm getting, you know, confused, I can feel that old sense of boredom in my life, that old sense of, you know, just what am I supposed to be doing here? That old sense of just anger, you know, at so many things that we feel aren't right. And so when that happens, it can be such an uncomfortable energy that rather than sit with it, we look to distract ourselves in any way possible. We turn on the telly, we get drunk, we just push it down, keep it just bottled up. This is not a very successful strategy, A, because none of our core moods and our fears and our confusions and our angers go away. And they don't just come back with the same force. The resistance that we greet them with makes them even stronger. Makes them even more powerful. There's a story I'm going to tell you from the Buddhist canon about that, but I'll wait a minute. So, and then there is the last way, which is bargaining. I know I'm overwhelmed. But it won't always be this way, so why don't you leave me alone? I'll figure it out, and it'll all be okay. When our fear of financial insecurity pops up, we try to argue with our fear. Problem is, again, that these fears and emotional states are triggered by prelingual, preconscious parts of the brain, the amygdala, that have to do with survival. And by the time we're arguing with these impulses, it's way too late. Fear does not understand, don't worry, I'll figure it out. Fear is like the most tenacious lawyer in the world. You can win the court case in your mind where you're arguing with yourself why you shouldn't, you know, quit your job and run away, or whatever fear is telling you to do. You can win the argument why it's a bad idea, and the next morning it'll still be there, because it's not something that's attached to a logical, reasonable part. You're basically arguing with space. It gives the illusion, because while we're screaming and arguing and debating with it, it stops for a little while we shout. And then it comes back, in my experience, saying the same thing. Yeah, but what if everything falls apart and I don't have any money and I'm homeless? But no, I'll figure it out. Really, I haven't been homeless yet. I'll make enough money. I'll pay the rent. I'm assuring you I'll be okay. And the other voice is, yeah, but what if I wind up homeless on the street? And so we debate with ourselves, and these debates can go on for a very long time. It's such a waste of energy. So what the Buddha proposed was an entirely different approach to the dark, antisocial, or the parts of us that we don't like to open to. The Buddha talks about in Yoniso Manasikara, which is basically the practice of welcoming, greeting, opening to every part of our experience. This doesn't mean we agree with it. This doesn't mean we agree with fear or anger. It doesn't mean we act out on it. It doesn't mean that we honor it. When people say, I honor my moods, I'm sort of terrified by that. But there is, in the Buddhist teachings, what's known as metta, friendliness, opening towards, greeting. And what that's like is you're throwing a party in your mind, and you're all at the front door, and all these guests are often coming through, their thoughts, their ideas, their emotions. And some of these visitors you don't really like. But just like in real life, you wouldn't shut the door and say, oh no, last time you came over there was a fight, and or last time you came over you turned out to be a Republican. Last time you came over you turned out to be unfun, boring, just fear-ridden and repetitive. We don't do that. We say welcome, we let them in, but then we don't turn over the party to them. We don't follow them around and say, hey, what do you think about this? What do you think about that? I really don't like you, so I'm going to hang out with you all the time. But that's the way we often relate to the darkest, most difficult parts of our experience. We literally, oh, this feeling that I don't like comes up, I've got to really, you know, fight it, push it away, argue with it, I've got to devote all my time to it. But there's more to me than any move. But I'm willing to chuck the rest of it just to be with these antisocial or fear or concern, doubtful voices in my mind. So it's a greeting, it's a saying hello, it's a saying yes, it's okay, this has happened. I'm not only the confident, put together, you know, friendly guy who's got good answers for people when they call me, I'm also the confused, doubting, worried, you know, unsure, at times overwhelmed person as well. It's all in there. It's allowed to be in there. In the story of what some Buddhist teachers, by the way, say that suffering is not so much the initial pain or the initial discomfort of these voices, it's the resistance with which we greet them. It's how much we push against it, how much we resist allowing our moods through, allowing feelings through, simply allowing them to arise and pass. Not agreeing, not allowing them to dictate, not listening to their projection stories in our minds, just allow the feelings to arise and pass. The story I was going to tell you in the Buddha, it was Sakka who literally taught the story of the anger-eating demon. When Sakka was away, he was a king, and his throne was vacated, and a demon came on his throne when he was away, and the guards weren't looking, and the demon sat on the throne and started making all these gnarly sounds that demons make. Sort of like, you know, the sort of those horror movie sounds. The guards, which represent in this story our normal ego way of doing with things, they ran to the throne, which is obviously a metaphor for consciousness, and they started screaming insults and poking at the demon with this, with their knives, and saying, "How dare you? Get out of here. This is the king's throne. You're not allowed to be here." Basically, the metaphor is we're saying to ourselves, "I'm not allowed to have anger." In the story, which is a metaphor, the guards say to the anger-eating demon, "You're not allowed to be here," but the anger and aversion that they greet this demon with makes the demon larger and larger and more ferocious, and soon it's spouting fire. And in the story that the Buddha recounts of Sakka, Sakka comes back, and he sees how unskillful his guards are acting, and he says, "It's okay, let me handle this." And he goes up to the demon, the anger-eating demon, he says, "It's okay. You're an honored guest like anyone else who sits on this throne. You're welcome. Can I bring you something, some tea?" And with each courtesy, he greets this anger-eating demon. It gets smaller and smaller and smaller until he can lift the demon off his seat and it goes scurrying on. And that's the metaphor for greeting everything that arises in us. We don't need to do more than say hello, note what it is, and just give it space enough in the body for the feelings to arise and to pass. We don't get caught up in the stories. So many of our dark passengers in our mind have stories that they want to tell us about how bleak the future we're going to be, or how poorly will be treated, and how other people are getting away with murder. In my experience, we let the stories go, we stay with the feelings, we greet them and give them space to rise and pass, and then eventually the moods pass. And all the resistance is the thing that keeps it from moving. So we do this a couple of ways. The first is throughout the day, no matter what state we're in, stop for a moment and just see what's going on. What is the texture of our experience? What do we feel like right now? What does Tuesday, going back to work after New Year's, you know, what is that like? How does that feel? What's the mind like? How does the body feel? Just open to what's ever going on without a need to say, "Oh, this is not interesting. I'm not right now in an energized, getting things done place. I'm just waiting for a subway train, or I'm just, you know, in a boring meeting." But what we want to do is just acquaint ourselves with what's going on. We want to get into the practice of greeting all the different moods and states and visitors, thought clouds that go through, so that we don't just wait until we're overwhelmed with something, with sadness or whatever. We practice greeting our experiences. The Buddha called this both yoniso manasikara and sati sampujana, and it simply means appropriate attention to what's going on inside of us. Just opening, without an agenda, without a judgment, just seeing, how does the body feel right now? Thich Nhat Hanh has a practice he calls smile yoga. I don't really know too much about it. He's from a different tradition of Buddhism than I am, but basically the neuroscience of it is actually pretty solid. Every time we smile, we release endorphins that basically detrigger the sympathetic nervous system. So it's worthwhile every once in a while just to stop and, like, if we feel okay, just see if we can bring a softer tone to the body. A smile, if it's not too false, any way that we can feel lighter and more at home in the body is useful. When difficult situations arise, a third technique is to, whenever we're in fear or we're in doubt or we're in panic, to find the area of the body that has gotten tight and contracted, whenever there's stress, whenever there's any form of emotional challenge, there's an underlying support in the body that allows us to, that keeps us basically up listening to these horror stories that our minds are telling us. And we can detach from the stories just long enough to find which area of the body has become tight. We can work with the breath and relax and breathe through. In my experience, I've gotten myself through such situations of fear simply by noticing that my stomach gets really tight. Or when I'm trying to not say something, my throat gets really tight. Or when there's real anger, my shoulders go up. So I've learned to read my body, and when there's something there that is really pushing at me, I first go into the body and I soften around it. Now that doesn't mean I don't occasionally, if somebody's really being a shit, keep my distance from them. But the good news is that we can keep our distance and draw boundaries and stay away from people that are unskillful without having to add all the storytelling and drama and suffering that we do. For every time somebody does something unskillful, the mind will repeat it 40 or 50 times in outrage. Sometimes aloud, sometimes in its mind repeating what we should have said. Just rehearsing for this optimal situation when we can tell them off, which never arises. So the idea is not to hang around or put up or use acceptance as a tool to stay around people that are acting poorly. It's actually to, if we need to stay away from someone, then stay away from someone. But we don't need to add on top of it all that mental storytelling and repeating of it. And the way we can do that is go into the body, find the anger, release it, and just say, you know what? I know what I need to do. I don't need to listen to this story anymore. A fine practice is metta, which is simply throughout the day reminding ourselves that true happiness is available to each of us within. We all deserve to be truly happy, all beings. And it's the absence of inner peace that makes us act like assholes. Nobody ever wakes up in a good mood, relaxed, and says, I'm going to give somebody a really hard time today. It's not the way it works. People carry around stress and they drive, and then somebody cuts them off, and then though the person who cut them off is the last straw, still that's the person who gets shot or, you know, beaten up. So what we need to do is develop the tools to release this energy. And we do this partially through metta, which is simply throughout the day, as well as checking in, see what's going on, and also bringing a smile when we're just trapped in the sort of monotony of life, and also seeing how the body is being held and how the breath feels. We also just say, we remind ourselves, I deserve to be truly happy. May I be free from stress and suffering. May all beings be truly happy and free from stress and suffering. Just this shift can replace all that thinking, that storytelling, with something that's safe. It's a big debate in 12-step rooms about whether people who don't believe in God should pray or not. And I personally have no issue with it, because for me, what prayer is, it's not talking to anything. If you believe there's something up there, that's fine. But for me, what prayer is, what metta is replacing the stressful thinking that causes my life so much difficulty and pain if I listen to it. It's replacing one set of unskillful thinking with a kind of thinking that is safe, that doesn't cause suffering, which doesn't cause harm to myself or other beings. It's basically resetting the entire default system of the brain from I don't have enough, I'm a victim, I've been mistreated, to I deserve to be happy and I can be happy. And that's a huge, huge shift and a huge different way to be with the difficult feelings that arise. Even while they're there, we can do the metta meditation. So we're going to do a meditation based on greeting what's ever going on. So find your comfortable seated position. And close your eyes. Bring your awareness within and put aside for a moment the stuff that's going on in the world outside. We're going to take a vacation from all that. You can always pick it back up. The world will still be there. So when we close our eyes, we're basically taking away the sense port that has the mind flood out. And we're rebalancing our awareness within. So just note what the texture of this moment is. Right now, it's Tuesday, it's 7:35, starting of a new year. The cold January month. Place in life where we're often wondering, well, what am I going to do now? What's next? Just see right now what the texture of this moment is like. What's happening in the body? How does the body feel? What does the mind feel like? Does the mind feel tired? Does it feel spacious? Does it feel anxious? Whatever is going on right now, in the body, the mind, what mood we're in, can we first just welcome it? Just say, yes, this too is part of life. if you want to call up a difficult or challenging experience, you can do that. But focus on the feelings in the body rather than the images and stories in the mind, and just see if you can greet all the sensations that make up each mood and each impulse as it arises. If the mind feels jumpy, just notice that and say, okay, that's where we're starting with. If you feel tired, perhaps full of doubt about whether meditation will be helpful for you, that's okay, start there. Just see if you can bring an awareness that is just open. See if we can cultivate a voice in the mind that is allowing, giving permission that doesn't want us to be better, what does it feel like to accept the way we are right now without any agenda, any self-improvement agenda? Can we just really get to a place where we're open to whatever is going through us? Now that we've greeted what our present internal state is like, see if we can soften. See if we can, without pushing away, we can gently soften so that the experience is easier to be with. So softening the shoulders, allowing them to relax, and making the breath as deep and full and comforting as you can, softening the belly. Allowing the eyes to settle. no matter where we are in life, how can we make ourselves able to be with ease with whatever is occurring? Sometimes if boredom or anxiousness comes up, I just think it's okay. That's all right. I'm not going to resist it. I'm just going to note it. Now see if you can find the breath in your body, the movement of the inhalation and exhalation. And rather than witnessing the breath from above, see if you can lower your awareness from behind the eyes. Allow it to stretch down as if you're lowering yourself into the body. When a baby lies on its mother's chest and feels the mother's heart beat in the chest slowly raising and lowering, the baby is completely safe. It reminds it of being in the womb. And that's what we're doing. We're touching base with the very force of life that keeps us alive. The energy that brings us in life and releases stress. Feel all the life coming into the body with the in-breath. And then when it releases, feel all the stress in the body being released. for the last few minutes, see if you can put aside any worry or concern and just allow yourself to fully fall entirely into the vessel that is the body. Just truly allow your awareness to sink. Feel all the energy that's coursing through the body with the breath. And if you can even feel the breath energy moving up through the torso until it reaches the eyes and softens the eyes. Feeling each out-breath like a shower of softening, releasing energy that releases any tension. So when we reach the time when it's we're about to begin the transition from the meditation back, it's important to reflect first was there any moments when you felt a little bit more peaceful or tranquil? Even opening to whatever your experiences, did the work you did softening around it, did it in any way make you feel more at home in the body? It's important to note when there's a sense of peace, because this peace we develop comes entirely from within. It doesn't take anything from anyone, it doesn't cost anything, it has no side effects. It's available to everyone at all times. We don't have to go anywhere to get it. So just always reflect when you have a moment of quiet serenity, what the source of that was, so that you give yourself the energy in the future to search for it in the right place. Now, if your mind was busy or wandering, that's okay. Just see if you can remember what thoughts, ideas, or stuff was dragging it away. Just note. Just note what was getting in the way, what was pulling you away. You don't need to add any judgment. You can just see which energies are pulling you away from finding peace inside. Now, when you return from a meditation, it's really important to do it slowly and gradually. You don't want to throw away any tranquility that you've cultivated through your efforts. So you want to do it slowly. You want to take the peace of mind with you, and you want to rebalance the mind, meaning when the meditation's over, not to simply flood your awareness outwards into the room around you, but to keep part of your awareness inside, knowing how your breath feels, knowing how your body feels, knowing what moods are present, and at the same time being aware of what's going on around you. This is what the Buddha referred to as sati, or mindfulness. It's awareness of both inside and outside. So when we practice opening up to what's ever happening inside of ourselves, the inevitable step then is to also open up to the rest of life. We take this practice where we're opening to our feelings and our moods and even the parts of us that we usually struggle with, we're greeting them, and then we're going to take this energy as we go out into the world and interact with people. We're going to try to, instead of have the same resistance and argumentativeness and judgment that we used to judge ourselves with, we're going to try to practice instead just an opening to the world as it is. As the Buddha said, if we wait for there to be a world where everybody is acting skillfully, we're fucked. Well, he didn't literally say that. That's my translation from the Pali. He did say that people have, from dawnless time, have acted unskillfully and will forever do as much. So to make our happiness contingent upon pushing away, avoiding, arguing with, reasoning, or changing other people is to set off on a course of fruitlessness where we will never experience true lasting inner peace. Better to simply open up to life as it is. And again, yeah, there's some people we're better off not around. That's fine. By all means, protect yourself. So, I thank you for listening. I don't take money for teaching. The bowl is to keep us in this space, which we've been in for the last 10 years. And so if you can contribute, generally between $3 and $5 keeps us here. But if it's too much, don't let it worry you. Just give what feels okay. And if you have nothing to give, don't let that cause you any stress. Don't ever let any financial situation get in the way of you gaining access to other spiritual practitioners and a place to safely practice. So I thank you. And now if there's any questions about anything that was talked about tonight or anything, hey.